Are you tired of trying to keep ahead in the rat race, only to have so much of your hard-earned money going to the tax collector? Equity doesn't pay the bills. Retirement savings don't pay you now, and there are only 24 hours in a day to work. The only solution is passive income that pays you 24/7 now, not 40 years from now. From vetted investment opportunities to tax-saving strategies, let John guide you through all the confusion and take control of your financial life in pursuit of financial freedom. So sit back, relax, and welcome to the Wealth and Freedom Nexus.
For investors seeking DSCR financing, check out timothyhero.com. The guy has closed over 150 DSCR loans in the last 2 years and has been appearing on podcasts and written about by journalists. He's well connected with some of the best lenders in the game and can get you the financing for your rental properties. Are you sick and tired of your day job? Do you think that there might be more to life than to live and die by the 9 to 5? If so, you are not alone. I left my safe and secure job in 2019, and since then I have met many entrepreneurs that have done the same thing. If you've enjoyed the Wealth and Freedom Nexus podcast for the educational news, tune into my YouTube channel for the inspirational stories on how you can say screw the W-2. Go to youtube.com/WFreedomNexus and look for the Screw the W-2 playlist. New episodes drop every Saturday and later this year will be released on all popular podcast platforms. As always, this is John Rickard, investor, educator, realtor, helping you find your way to wealth and freedom. Hello and welcome back to another great episode of the Wealth and Freedom Nexus podcast. This is episode 81, dropping the first week of May of 2023. Now, as always, be sure to hit that subscribe button, share this episode with other like-minded individuals that are in pursuit of wealth and more, most importantly, freedom. And if you haven't checked out my Instagram account, WFreedomNexus, and my YouTube channel, youtube.com/WFreedomNexus, be sure to do so as I just dropped a ton of new content last month for April. April is financial literacy month, so I really put the pedal to the metal with some new Instagram posts and videos and reels and YouTube shorts and et cetera. So it was exhausting to say the least, but a lot of good content that I wanted to get out there. So hope you have a chance to check it out, do the thumbs up, subscribe, and hit the bell so you never miss a new video or notification. Now, for this week's podcast, I want to really dive into insurance and specifically property insurance. Now, if you own any property, investment property, or maybe your own primary residence, you probably have noticed an increase in your insurance premiums for 2020, 2021, and especially 2022, or at least I'm speaking from my experience. For my fourplex alone, just last year, the annual premium went up about 20%, actually a little over, but I'm just kind of rounding down. In fact, an interesting note, and I'll try to have a link to this in the show notes, Minnesota was number one for hail claims by State Farm Insurance in 2022. And Iowa, I can't remember off the top of my head, but that was in the top five. And well, I own property in both those states. So yippee me, just have to schedule that and budget that in appropriately. Now, insurance is one of those funny things. You hope you never need it. You're glad when you do have it. If something happens, it's like, oh boy, that would have been, you know, $50,000 in damages. I just have my $5,000 deductible. I would have been ruined without insurance. But ironically, if you don't use the insurance, you just feel like you're getting ripped off, you know, paying those premiums and really don't have anything to show for it. Now, while my 20% increase that I just mentioned on my fourplex in Minnesota was, well, uncomfortable to say the least, I know of many other investors that I've talked to and networked. They've seen 30, 40, 50%, even as high as 100%. Increases year over year. Granted, the last one was kind of an outlier with some very unique situations and value adds. But regardless, when you're talking double digit increases year to year, it gets frustrating. And probably what's most frustrating of all, I've been investing in real estate now for 7 years. I have looked at hundreds, if not getting close to 1,000, you know, pro formas, broker price opinions, various analysis on rental properties. And a lot of times they show these rosy pictures. Oh, you buy it for X and rent will go up 8% a year, or, you know, sometimes double digits, and you will have this much cash on cash return and this much increase and yada, yada, yada. And very, very rarely, in fact, off the top of my head, I can't think of a single instance where the pro formas or projections or whatever you want to call them, they factor in increases to not only the property insurance, but the property taxes. You know, imagine that for every government entity out there. Well, if the value of your property goes up, well, gee, they seem to think they should get some more property tax revenue off of that. And it's just, you know, like I said, kind of frustrating if you're new to investing and even a seasoned real estate investor. It's kind of hard to kind of budget for those increases, especially when you're talking double digit increases. In fact, I'll put a link to the show notes for one of my shorts that I did for just kind of a quick back of the envelope math that I use for factoring in increases for rent to factor in for the increases for property taxes and property insurance. But going back to the insurance piece of it, which is the focus of this week's episode, I really kind of wanted to get into more of what has caused all these increases. Maybe more importantly, is there anything that homeowners and investors can do to mitigate or better plan for these increases? Now, like I said, this is episode 81, and after months and months and months of trying to get Jake from State Farm on the show, unfortunately, I had to temper my expectations back a bit, but got on just as good of a guest, my friend and insurance agent, Paul McCarthy, with State Farm up in Lake Elmo, Minnesota. I've actually known Paul for, well, almost 20 years. And he has actually been my wife's agent since she was born with a small insurance policy, my mother-in-law's agent, and now my son Ronald's agent with a small life insurance policy that we got a week or maybe 2 weeks after he was born. Not every day that you get to talk to someone that has dealt with three generations for insurance needs. So with that, we will get into my interview with Paul after a word from our sponsors.
Hi, everyone. Jeremy here. I do voiceover work for all kinds of projects. For example, do you need a voice for your phone greetings and call waiting services?
Or a villain in your next tabletop role-playing game?
How about a birthday message from someone who lives in a pineapple under the sea?
These are just a few examples, and there are no limits to what you can use voiceover for. Feel free to stop on by my website or just send me an email in the description below. And let's create something amazing together.
We'll be right back.
Are you somebody that's been dealing with betrayal trauma? Are you somebody that has a really giant heart and you want to give back to this world, but you're not sure how you can do that because your trust has been broken? Well, I've got good news for you. I have the perfect podcast for you to come and listen to. It's called The Other Side of the Struggle, Healing from Betrayal Trauma by Erin Anderson Betrayal Trauma Coaching. Come learn how to trust again. Come learn how to open up that giant heart and heal from your betrayal trauma at The Other Side of the Struggle on all major platforms.
Hey, Paul, thanks for coming on the show.
Hello, John. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you bet. So now, obviously, like I alluded to in the intro, I've known you for several years. You've worked with my mother-in-law and my wife for a number of years. I don't know if we're the only or maybe one of a few third-generation families you've worked with, or maybe one of a few.
There's actually quite a few, and I thoroughly enjoy it.
All right, cool. So, well, now for, like I alluded to, I tried for quite some time to get Jake from State Farm on this podcast, but he never got back my phone calls. So obviously we brought you on, but can we, just for a quick overview, backstory on yourself, your firm, and, maybe even how you got into the insurance business?
Yeah. So I'm in my 50s now, and I started in this business when I was 26. So
okay,
call it 27 years like that. Okay. Coming out of school, I was a school teacher. I met the woman I've been married to for over 25 years. And I was trying to figure out what I was going to do next. And that became State Farm, and that became insurance. I was on the corporate side at State Farm for 8 years, to a large extent in a training capacity, but I worked in claims and a variety of roles. I then taught in a business school setting for a few years, teaching agents in the pre-licensing and continuing education world, and became an agent on January 1st of 06. So I've been at it here in Lake Hummel for a while.
Oh, wow. Gotcha. Okay. Sounds good. So now, for simplicity's sake, and I know you and, you know, State Farm and, well, really in any insurance provider out there, you know, there's auto insurance, health insurance, short-term disability, property insurance, et cetera. I think if we try to go over all those, this would be a world record length podcast.
Marathon.
Yeah. So for simplicity, I just want to concentrate on property insurance, obviously primary home, but then also as rental insurance, where myself and many of my listeners have rental properties. Now, myself, I saw a 20% increase in one of our annual premiums for a fourplex in Marshall. I've talked to other investors, you know, 30, 40% I've seen. And on the extreme side, I've even seen 80 to 100% annual increases. I know, obviously, you can't speak to every single situation individually, but as a whole, what's kind of going on with the industry, you know, across the board? Because this seems to be kind of, you know, not just Minnesota specific or not even Florida specific that got hit by hurricanes, obviously.
Yeah, it's been an interesting ride. We've seen rates change over the years, and every couple of years we end up engaging in lengthy conversations with a lot of our customers who are asking us, hey, what's going on? Mm-hmm. So it's a common question. I don't know if this is good or bad, but you're talking to a salesperson who said he used to be a trainer slash teacher. So I'll give you what I think will be a fairly elaborate explanation.
Okay.
So big picture, I'm not going to suggest that insurance companies aren't in the business of making money. They are.
Mm-hmm. Any businesses, basically.
any businesses. But we're not talking Amazon, Meta, Google type margins or growth. In the insurance industry, I would describe it as kind of a slow and steady wins the race.
Okay.
So technical stuff here in the insurance industry, they talk about a expense ratio and a loss ratio. I'll use some hands here. Expense ratio, loss ratio. Expense ratio is your cost of running the business. Your loss ratio is what you spend or what you pay out in claims.
Okay.
And a target for insurance companies is for those two numbers to meet 97, 98, 99.
Okay.
So annual profit targets of, you know, 1.5, 2%. Stock companies are happy to make more than that, and they will reward shareholders with dividends and an appreciation in the stock price. A mutual company, if a state regulator says, hey, you're making too much money, they're going to ask that they or demand, frankly, that they lower rates or pay out what would be kind of a partial refund of insurance premiums, also called a dividend.
Okay.
But in the grand scheme of things, not a lot of insurance companies have success being profitable in the homeowners insurance sector.
Okay.
The auto insurance sector can offset some of the losses they take in the homeowner sector, but a lot of years, the combined ratio, the expense ratio and the loss ratio is well over 100%. In other words, the cost of doing business plus the cost of their claims, what they pay out, is oftentimes 105, 110, 120 in egregious years.
Wow.
A year like 2021 in Minnesota for State Farm, I don't know what the number is, but I wouldn't be frankly surprised if it isn't 200.
Wow.
200%. Yeah. So now, okay, fine. How do insurance companies make money? Obviously, they make money with other people's money. There are investments. And it's about scope and scale. An insurance company, and frankly, an insurance agent, isn't going to make a great deal of money off of any one customer.
Mm-hmm.
The law of large numbers at work. If you make a little bit of money off of a whole lot of customers, and that's what makes it work. But State Farm, you know, if it was a publicly traded company, it would be a Fortune 50 company.
Okay.
A Minnesota comparison maybe would be 3M.
Okay.
So, you know, they've got these assets, these reserves. Claim reserves have to be held in reserve for the sake of paying claims. But there are some investable assets, and they do make money.
Okay.
With those. And that helps to offset some of those losses. But there's three things that insurance company can do to make money, recoup okay. their losses, cover the costs. One of them is you lower expenses. You reorg, you consolidate, you do layoffs, you become more efficient, maybe through technology. That tends to impact service levels.
Yeah.
Number two would be to get a little tighter with the checkbook.
Okay.
We're going to look at a roof and say, yeah, that got hit by hail, but the hail wasn't big and it was intermittent. We're not going to replace this roof.
Gotcha.
As opposed to looking at every roof and saying, oh, there's a sniff of hail. Yep, we're going to put a new roof on it. And that happens. You know, that's cyclical. It can be a little bit cyclical. There's years where they seem to be a little more generous with the checkbook than others. And then the last one is rate, charging people more for the product. And in Minnesota, to answer your question, what's at work, even though we're not in the national news for, and I'll try to speak nationally, but we're not in the national news with hurricanes.
Mm-hmm.
We're not in the national news for massive forest fires, you know, the California, Colorado type losses.
Okay.
What happens up here doesn't make the news, frankly, but it's a high frequency. It's not so much severity, but a high frequency of wind and hail claims.
Okay.
It seems about every 3-4 years, a really big storm blows through and beats up a lot of homes.
Mm.
And those are expensive years for us. And anomalies, insurance companies have baked into their model. They start to look at trends and they start to say, okay, this is a region, these zip codes, this territory is an area that's just prone to loss, and we need to charge our consumers more for their product. So that's what's happening kind of locally here in Minnesota, is a very high frequency and high volume of wind and hail claims. So there are more losses and there's more claims getting filed. Number two, cost of repairing. Anybody who's renovated a home, anybody who's built a home, you're going through it.
Yep. Yeah. The kitchen project from hell, but that's another podcast topic.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the cost per square foot, the cost of building a home from the ground up per square foot in Minnesota, it would have been $130 a square foot 15 years ago. And that's a nice house, you know, not custom, not luxury, but a nice house. That number is easily over $200 a square foot now. Is it 210? Is it 215? It kind of depends on the builder who you talk to. But builders have a bigger profit margin, to be blunt. That's not a criticism of them. It's just a reality.
Yeah.
And the cost of the products, the materials and labor, and some of that's a throwback to the pandemic and COVID.
Yeah.
Some of it is just wholesalers, manufacturers, and retailers charging more for their widget, petroleum. Is in everything. It's in siding. It's in our flooring. It's in our roofing materials.
Mm-hmm.
When a cost of a barrel goes up, the cost of those products goes up. So that's very, very much an issue at work. So when people are seeing their rates go up, and this is a question we have a lot. Hey, Paul, my cost to insure my home for $450,000 a year ago was $1,800. And this year it's $2,100. What's going on? That's a $300 price swing. The first thing I'm doing is I'm showing people that's true. That has happened. But a year ago, your home was insured for $470. And this year it's insured for $540 because if you look at your home from the ground up, if it burned the ground, it's going to cost more. So when you show people the kind of the correlation between those, it helps to offer some perspective or context. Still not a very popular, pleasant conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, that's what's going on. And something kind of specific to Minnesota too, what insurance companies are paying for siding work, for new roofs, for those projects to get taken on, for those projects to get completed. It is just, frankly, it's just more expensive. From state to state, it will vary. A lot of contractors running around knocking on doors in Minnesota after a storm wouldn't bother to cross the river into Wisconsin because what they're going to get paid to put a roof on a home is just less. It's just less than what's getting paid in Minnesota. And so all things being equal, a home 10 miles into Wisconsin, the home insurance is going to be less, not, you know, half, but less
than
what it is going to be in Minnesota because the going rate for construction repairs is less than what contractors are demanding, commanding, and charging here in Minnesota. So that's a lot of information, but maybe it helps give some context.
Yeah, no, it definitely makes sense. And I mean, I still remember the days, early days of the pandemic. One of my coworkers, you know, he does drywall and some little construction on the side. And can't remember if it was March or April when like a sheet of plywood was $100. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. It's not $100. And he actually sent me a picture from his phone from Home Depot or whatever. It's like $99.60. Like, okay, I guess he wasn't kidding. So,
and, you know, and not to pick on contractors, but do you remember when plumbers plumbed homes with copper?
Yep. Right? Now they do the flex piping.
Yeah. Copper was an expensive material. And frankly, it was very labor intensive, right?
Yeah.
Cuts and sweating everything together. And somewhere, I don't know, it was 05 or when it was, PEX and those plastic products became very, very popular.
Yep.
It's a vastly easier product to work with. And from a materials perspective, it's vastly cheaper. But guess what plumbers didn't do? They didn't lower their cost of plumbing a home.
Yeah. They're like, oh, now I can make more on the labor side of
yeah,
it.
Yeah. So it's just, margin. You know, it is what it is. So insurance companies, they make some money on their investments. Maybe to use those analogies I used earlier, they lower their expenses. Maybe they get a little tighter with the checkbook, but ultimately the forces driving what's going on, the overwhelming forces are so overwhelming, frankly, that the primary tool left in the toolkit for these insurance companies, big companies, small companies, regional companies, national companies, brands like State Farm and lesser known brands, all of them are resorting to some of the same basic methods, which is to charge more for their product, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yep. No, and that makes sense. So, well, it kind of leads to my next question too. And I mean, come August, it'll be 7 years that I've invested in real estate. Mm-hmm. I haven't kept a count, but I know it's been hundreds of, you know, deals, drive-bys, pro formas, you know, some analysis of, you know, this property, that property, et cetera. And they show all these, you know, oh, the rent's going to go up, you know, pick your number, 8% a year, and the property's going to appreciate 6%. And yeah. Yada, 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 yada. And I've never seen a pro forma that says, well, with the increased value of the home, property insurance and property taxes, which is a whole nother side topic, tend to go up as well. But I've never seen a pro forma. They just seem to think, well, the taxes today are $2,000. The taxes should be $2,000, you know, in 2035. That being said, you know, you, myself, or anyone has a crystal ball to say, well, you know, 2025, it looks like my insurance premiums, my taxes are going to go up 18%, of course. But, you know, taking that in, you know, trying to strategize more, or maybe, you know, just looking long term, what can, you know, homeowners and investors do to, I guess, maybe plan ahead or maybe even soften the blow for, I'll just say, the inevitable increases down the line?
Yeah, it would be lovely. You talked about a crystal ball. It would be lovely. It would be lovely to see and know that at some point the prices will plateau.
Yeah,
that would be awesome, because it's easier. You know, frankly, if the price is the same year over year over year, I'm not getting the phone calls, hey, what's going on, or people expressing frustration with the price increases. What's kind of ironic is somebody like you or me who's owned property and has been insuring property for years, we do remember what it used to be.
Yep.
We remember when it was $700 a year and now it's $1,900 just for the sake of a number.
Mm-hmm.
And when we get a phone call, a referral or whatever, some young couple getting into their first home calls and they say, hey, you know, I was told by my mortgage banker or my realtor or a friend or my parents, right, to call you for insurance. And I say, okay, yeah. So we look at the property, we figure out what it needs to be insured for. We talk a little bit about kind of the role that a deductible can play in the cost of the premium. And we present the price to the person. We go $1,700. They don't flinch. They don't know any better. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
It's the first time they've seen a homeowner's premium. So it's a recency conversation, I guess, but you gave me this question in writing before this podcast and I gave it a little bit of thought and I'll come up with just a real kind of crude analogy. And,
okay.
And I'm not an actuary, not even a math major, but
neither am I.
Right. So 1996, when I started in this business, the home I lived in at that time was insured for probably $150,000.
Okay.
Homeowner's premium, I'll just say it was $400 a year. I think it was a little less than that, but let's just say that that's what the number was. I don't live in that house anymore. But if I did, I can tell you with complete confidence that today, 27 years later, that house, instead of being insured for $150, would be insured for $450.
Okay,
which is a 200% increase.
Mm-hmm.
And the price would have gone from $400 a year to about $1,600 a year, which is a 300% increase. So the structural, the amount that the house is physically insured for went up 200%. The cost of the home insurance went up 300%.
Sure.
To separate those two and say the 100 is the number to focus on, that maybe is a conversation between, you know, is that the nominal rate? But by my quick math, the difference between those two is you've got probably 5% to the average homeowner, what they've realistically experienced. If you say I went from 400 to 1600 over 27 years, the effective change on that is about 5.5% year after year after year. Now there's some years where it holds constant. Cost of construction didn't go up. Insurance company had 2-3 good years where they weren't paying out a lot of claims. There were no storms, to use the Minnesota example. And they can hold their own. The price stays constant. Then you get clobbered like the year we just came through, 2021.
Mm-hmm.
I insure about 1,000 houses, 3,000 cars. We filed over 800 claims.
Wow.
Yeah, for the May 2021 storm. If there's any consolation, as my customers are seeing a rate increase, at least they can say we benefited from it. They got it.
Sure.
It's a dude in Marshall, Minnesota.
Yep.
His homeowner's price go up because of what happened in this zip code. That's not entirely true. The pricing is, people always ask, okay, are the hurricanes in Florida affecting our prices up here? No. They look at it at a regional and zip code by zip code basis. But it is. And at the end of the day, it's a shared experience, and everybody's seeing their prices go up, whether they've had the benefit of filing a claim and getting a new roof or not.
Sure.
So to answer your question, 5.5 seems to be kind of the ongoing year over year kind of number. There's going to be some years where it's less than that, some years where then it's more than that. Again, it would be lovely if we could hold the line at some point
with
the construction, but it's just no way to know.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And that's actually, I know historically, you know, pre the crazy real estate time we're in now, they always say real estate, you know, nationally over time appreciates about 6%, you know, year over year. So thinking about that, it's like, well, you know, if you bank in 6% appreciation, 6% cost increases, you know, that's pretty close to the 5.5, like you just mentioned. So,
yeah. Yep.
But all right. Now for any, you know, obviously you said the new homeowners, they see the premium. Oh gosh, I didn't know what to expect. So it's like, whatever. But, you know, for longtime homeowners, investors where, gosh, I remember this was 400, now it's 1600. And yes, my house is insured for 400,000 versus 150 and whatnot. But, you know, at the same token, you know, hey, we're all looking to, you know, cut budgets, you know, keep things in lines, et cetera. What are some like just general tools to maybe, you know, help us with insurance premiums? I know a lot of people say like, well, I'll shop around. And I know there's a company that has a lot of TV ads. They had a name your price tool for many years. It's like, well, yeah, you name your price, they name your coverage. So it's not like you're going to get the best deal, but maybe just some tips or with your, you know, decades of experience, what would you recommend to property owners kind of maybe keep the numbers in line?
Yeah. That company you spoke of that will remain unnamed would just as soon avoid becoming a leader in the homeowners insurance market, by the way.
Yeah.
They've done the math and they figured out what's going on, that it's kind of a lost leader. There's a couple of things that the industry has explored. I promise I'll get to your question. At an industry level, some carriers, let's say here in Minnesota, are saying to exterior contractors, this is the most we're going to pay to put siding on a house. This is the most we're going to pay to put a new roof on the house. You have to expect a more modest profit margin. Mm-hmm. It is what it is. So in other words, John Rickgarn and Heather file a claim. They need a new roof. Their insurance company, their contractor says it's going to cost $40. Their insurance company says, we'll pay $30. We think that's fair. We think there's still a profit margin baked in there for the contractor. This is what we're going to pay. We're going to lower what we pay for this kind of work.
Okay.
The contractor is absolutely going to push back on that. And that's,
sure,
that would be their right. The homeowner might say, wait a minute, that's not what I've been paying for. Isn't it, you know, isn't it time to make everything right in my world? Again, I don't disagree with those sentiments, but if insurance companies are successful in that, they might actually drive a new direction, drive this industry in a new direction, where they're presenting to the homeowner and they're saying, look, you've got to go out and find a contractor who's willing to do this work for this amount.
Yeah.
This is the only way we're going to keep costs down. Another industry change, bigger deductibles. I know in the state of Iowa, the company I represent says everybody's got a 1% deductible. If your house is insured for $650,000, 1% of that is $6,500.
Okay.
So that's your skin in the game if your house gets hit by a storm. Full stop, we're not even negotiating it.
Okay.
So pushing bigger deductibles, asking customers to share in that. Again, that's an industry trend that we might see more of. Some insurance companies too are saying, once the siding on your home or once the roof on your house is more than 15 years old, we're going to change how we handle your claim. We're going to pay you less because the materials are older. I think that's a question you have for me yet this morning, but that's another thing. As far as this, those are kind of industry changes that are in play. It's challenging because the entire industry has to get on the same page and they kind of have to roll out these changes together. So everybody's getting the same, taking the same medicine at the same time. And that's about as popular as reforming Social Security or Medicare, you know,
which always goes nowhere.
It's a lovely, pleasant conversation. You know, this has to be a fully funded mandate, rather. It is what it is. The math has to work. And so, again, the insurance company's go-to solution has been to raise prices of their product, to raise rates. As far as what an individual homeowner can do, make sure your home is properly insured. It's kind of the Goldilocks, not too hot, not too cold, just right thing. I've had some customers come in, prospective customers come in and say, you know, I'm not crazy about the insurance company I'm working with, not crazy about the agent or agency I'm working with, and I think my prices are bad, or I just had a bad experience. Whatever's compelling them to shop, we get together, and I say, look, I can give you an apples-to-apples quote. I can match whatever you're doing currently, and we can do that as a basis for comparison, but I still need, in the spirit of due diligence, I still need to do this the right way, and I need to do it my way, and I'm going to tell you what your home needs to be insured for. And I've sat down with some people whose homes, in my opinion, are insured for more than they need to be. Yeah. A real crude tool that a lot of less experienced agents or agent team members will do is, what are you paying for the house? Oh, you're paying, you know, $510 for the house. We'll insure the house for $510.
Okay. But
what if it's a 1.5-acre lot in kind of a high demand area? Well, you know, a lot of that home's real estate market value includes the land that the house is sitting on. I'm looking at the house and saying, we don't need to insure this house for any more than $375.
Okay.
And that's what we're going to do. So there are some people out there who, frankly, may be overinsured.
Okay.
And a real easy thing to do would be to revisit how much structural coverage is on their house. That other conversation that we've already kind of touched on is your deductible. Be prepared to carry a bigger deductible. Use your home insurance for the big stuff, not the inconvenient stuff. I got people with $1,000 deductible.
Which is just silly to me, but.
it is, right? But they got a $1,200 claim.
Yeah.
And they're prepared to file a claim with their insurance company so that they can get a check for $200. It's like, that's not the point. If you've got a $22,000 claim, by all means, please use your insurance. Let us put a new roof and maybe replace some of the siding on your home. But bigger deductible kind of moves people away from what would otherwise be maybe, let's say, a bad decision.
Sure.
Those are the big ones. And it's okay to shop.
Yeah.
It is. It's okay to shop. What I always say in this industry, I'll draw something very crude visual here for you.
For those listening, this is on my YouTube channel, so you can see the visuals later.
Well, you got time and you got cost. And a lot of companies in the industry are doing something like this.
Okay.
They raise their price, they start to lose customers, they lower their price. They raise their price, they start to lose customers. And a company like the one I represent, the line is going to look a little bit more like this.
Okay.
The broken line in the middle. We're going to gradually increase the cost of this product to the extent that we need to, but it still happens. It still has a cumulative effect, and I still have customers to call me and say, Paul, I like working with you. I like your office. I like the company, but it's time for me to shop. And I say, I can respect that. Just make sure you're getting, you know, comparable coverage.
Right.
They go out, they shop. I don't hear anything from them. I don't get a cancellation request, or maybe they shoot me an email or a phone call and say, hey, man, I looked around. You're right. It is what it is. You know, thanks. So it is okay to shop. There are some companies out there that are charging people too much. That's happening. And you don't know until you know. Not a big fan of somebody shopping every year. I mean, to be
honest, that
it's too much. You know, every 5 years you can take a look. If you're working with a good agency, a good company, you should come to the conclusion that all things being equal, all of these companies are pricing their product in about the same place because they're all working off of the same data. They're all working off the same loss history and trends.
Yeah. No, then it's kind of funny you mentioned that. I actually have a friend who has a number of properties, and I don't know if he does it every year now, but for a while it was like every year, like clockwork. He went to all the agents and, you know, sometimes bounced around, and it's like, you know, at the end of the day, you probably spent 5 hours of your time to save $25. Is that really efficient for you?
Yep. I remember having a guy one time leave, and I think the net savings, like 3 cars, a house, an umbrella policy. I think there was a boat in there. You know, the net savings was $300. And he felt pretty good. He felt pretty good about saving $300 a year. Wanted to let me know he was saving $300 a year. And I'm like, yeah, you know, Troy, I get that. I'm curious, how many quotes did you get? You know, I thought he was going to say 2 or 3.
Yeah.
And the answer was 13.
Oh, you know, geez.
You sat there and you got quotes from 13 insurance companies. And it was the 13th that could save you $300 a year.
Wow.
Yeah, so at that point, you just wish somebody well, you know.
Yeah.
Let it go and move on.
Yeah, it's like, you know, did you really sit down and figure out, okay, how much time did I put into this? How much am I saving? Factor that per hour. There's probably a Vietnamese sweatshop worker that just out-earned you in that context.
Right.
Well, now, you kind of alluded to this, and I know we're getting to kind of the last question that I'm going to let you take from here because this is a little over my head, but in conjunction with the, you know, how to structure a policy, how to, you know, save money, what the insurance companies are looking at. I know you kind of alluded to there's a kind of like a repair versus replacement and the pros and cons of that. And then just make sure I get this right, the actual cash value versus replacement and also pros and cons of that.
Yeah.
That extends my expertise in it. So I'm just going to hand it off to you on this.
Sure. I'll touch on a concept that it ties in here. If your car will get hit while parked and your driver's side door had a dent in it, your insurance company would replace the door. More specifically, they would pay to skin the door and paint the adjacent panels.
Okay.
They would not replace every piece of sheet metal on your car.
Okay.
If one side of your house gets hit by hail and the siding is still in production, the insurance company is going to pay to replace that one side of your home with siding that is comparable to what you had or identical, preferably to what you had.
Okay.
And in so doing, they will have made you whole. One of the challenges, and again, this touches a little bit on repairs, the manufacturers of siding and the manufacturers of shingles, they tend not to love to change out their product line.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
And that's okay, right? But, oh, that siding's been out of production. You know, they produced it for a period of 3 years. Your house got hit by hail. The entire home needs to be resided. Now, that's nobody's fault, right? It is what it is. But the insurance company's paying to replace all of the siding around the entire house, and it becomes this expensive claim. The contractor's delighted because there's more profit in it. The homeowner gets a new look, and they're pleased too. But again, it contributes to the situation we're describing. What's driving cost in the insurance industry? Why is claim handling more expensive, and why are the cost of premiums higher? As far as the claims themselves, if you've had a claim, and a lot of people listening, I know I've had claims, most insurance companies are offering a replacement cost product, and buyer beware, if somebody's offering you a significantly less expensive product, that probably is the big difference.
Okay.
The competitor's quote, the competitor's product is not offering you the same kind of coverage. How does that work? So my house gets hit by hail, siding and roof, $50,000. That's what it's going to cost. Siding and to replace the siding, all of the siding and to replace the roof, my insurance company estimates it's going to be $50,000 to replace all of that.
Okay.
The house is 20 years old. The lifespan on the siding projected to be, let's just keep it simple. Let's say that the lifespan on the roof and the siding is projected to be 40 years. That would be pretty generous for roofing materials, but just sure, for the sake of the analogy, what that means is my home, the shingles and the siding on my home are through 50% or half of their normal life expectancy. So my insurance company, as you can imagine, that happens to be State Farm, they're going to say, hey, your total job is 50 grand. Here's 25. I'm not factoring the deductible into this illustration for simplicity's sake, but here's 25,000 upfront. When the work is done, when you can show that the work is done, a building permit, a signed contract with the contractor, an inspection, we, your insurance company, will release the other 25,000. People are paid for replacement cost benefits when those benefits have, when those costs rather have been incurred. So it's the cost you actually realized. If I, as that homeowner, say, you know what, I can live with the roof the way it is. I can live with the siding the way it is. I take that $25,000 and I just put it in the bank. My mortgage company may not be real excited about that. Right. But if I own my home outright, I can do that. And the insurance company isn't going to release the other 25 grand because their take on it is what your roof was worth and what your siding was worth at the time of the loss is 25,000.
Okay.
So that's what we're going to pay you. We'll pay you the full 50 replacement cost benefit when the work is done, but not until the work is done. So to your question, if I buy an actual cash value policy, I'm going to get less, I should expect less, and I should also expect a lower insurance premium.
Okay. If
there are some insurance carriers out there, like I mentioned earlier, who are saying after your roof is 10 years old or after your roof is 15 years old, we're going to shift how we handle your claim to an ACV or actual cash value basis. So to go back to my analogy, let's take siding out of the illustration. Somebody's got a roof that's halfway through its reasonable life expectancy. That insurance company is going to pay that initial actual cash value settlement amount, but they're not going to release any additional monies after that. It's a little bit, you know, the person could say, I got a $1,000 deductible. They don't. They don't have a $1,000 deductible. They pay the $1,000 deductible and half the cost of re-roofing their home. In exchange for that, they get a lower premium.
Okay.
So I would say that most insurance carriers out there are providing offering a replacement cost contract. Is one better than the other? If you can significantly lower your premiums by getting an ACV policy, an actual cash value contract, I'm okay with that. I am. Sure. I'm okay with that because, again, that's how they handle repairs to your car. Mm-hmm. Going back to my illustration, when your door got hit, they didn't replace every panel on your car. They replaced the door that was damaged. That's an actual cash value claim handling process.
Okay.
So if you can get an insurance contract with ACV coverage and they're going to offer you a significantly lower premium, hey, you know, explore that option. Understand that your out-of-pocket cost in the event of a loss is going to be higher.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can save, you know, like the conversation I've had with you, John, about deductibles, the difference between a $1,000 deductible and a $2,500 deductible.
Right.
Person is going to save $350 a year, right?
Yeah.
350 times 5, 1500, 1750. In 5 years' time, they're going to save enough in insurance premiums to offset the difference in between the small deductible and the large one.
Mm-hmm.
Go with the bigger deductible. Homes over 350, absolutely over 400, you should have a bigger deductible.
Sure.
The ACV, it's going to be the same kind of delta equation. This is how much I'm saving in insurance premiums. You know, if a person would be paying $2,000 to insure a home and they opt for ACV and they're paying $1,200 instead, it's, you know, $800 a year. year over year over year over year, that can make a huge dent in what their out-of-pocket cost would be should their house actually get hit by that hailstorm we've been talking about. If the difference between a replacement cost contract and an actual VAT cash value contract is 10%, absolutely not.
I'm not even sure
if I would do it for 20%, you know,
but sure.
if the savings is significant, an ACV contract may be worth pursuing. Most insurance companies out there, though, are providing replacement cost policies. And all I would suggest to your listeners is if you're going to explore or shop, just make sure you're doing apples to apples.
Sure. Well, and then maybe on that point, too, all of us are different. I kind of look at it's like, what's your maybe risk tolerance and philosophies. I mean, granted, this is auto insurance, but I still remember years ago, I had a coworker. He just bragged. It's like, yeah, I only got $100 deductible. Anything happens to my car, I'm only at $100. It's like, yeah, but you're paying, I don't remember, a lot more per month than what I was paying my car. It's like, yeah, but if anything happens, I only have to pay $100. Like, fine, I'm done arguing, whatever you want to do.
Yeah, good for you. Yeah, it's like the conversation about the days in the late 80s and early 90s, HMO medical insurance. I've only got a $10 copay.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations, but you're paying $24,000. Yeah. In
insurance premium. But I only got a $10 copay.
Yeah, it better be a Cadillac. Yeah.
So, all right. Well, as we wrap this up, Paul, and again, I want to thank you for taking the time to, educate my listeners. Yeah. Obviously, as of right now, this has been downloaded or listened to in over 100 countries, but narrowing that down to if anyone in the Lake Elmo, Stillwater, Twin Cities, or maybe general Minnesota area as interested, maybe learning more, contacting your office for a quote, or like you said, maybe they're at the point of shopping around. What's the best way to reach out to you?
Yeah. Well, thank you for inviting me and for allowing me to participate in this conversation. I really appreciate it, John.
You bet.
We have customers in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Duluth, Minnesota, Marshall, Minnesota. We get customers all over Minnesota and Wisconsin, and I and my team are all licensed in those two states.
Okay.
I am not licensed outside of Minnesota and Wisconsin, but we can do business with anybody anywhere in Minnesota and Wisconsin. It isn't necessarily a metro Minnesota or East Metro thing. Needless to say, the bulk of our customers fall into that territory, though.
Sure.
A phone call or text, I think, is the easiest for a lot of people. Our office number is 651-748-9400. You can send a text to that exact same number to get the conversation going, but a phone call or text is easy. An email, paul@mccarthyagency.net. paul@mccarthyagency.net. Shoot me an email. We can get the conversation going there as well. Out on our website, you can kind of initiate the quoting process as well. There's kind of a click in option as well, but I don't need to meet people for a cup of coffee or in office. I love that when we can.
Sure.
There's a lot of value that comes from that conversation, but I will meet people kind of on their terms at a time and place that's convenient to them, and would look forward to the opportunity to helping some of the folks that you serve through your podcast.
Sounds good. Makes sense. And I know, Stu, you didn't give a fax number, so congrats on joining the 21st century.
Yeah.
Shocks me when I hear, like, what's your fax number?
I'm right.
It's a fax.
Yeah. So. Save the stamp and
So, all right. So the phone number, call and text, otherwise email or website. Again, for all those listening, working out, walking the dog, or driving to work, whatever, these will be in the show notes so you don't have to hit rewind and try to find a pen and paper. So, Paul, again, thanks for your time. It was great having you on.
Thank you very much, John. Be well.
Thank you for listening. Be sure to share, rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. For more updates, check out www.wealthandfreedomnexus.com. Remember, nothing on this show should be considered tax, legal, investment, or professional advice. This show is produced solely for educational and informational purposes. Please consult an appropriate and licensed tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for specific advice for your situation. For distribution or publication rights or media interviews, please contact the host.